Blog Talk Radio.
This is for you, Kings fans, wherever you may be. All the frustration and disappointment of the past is gone.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the JewelCast. We are starting a couple minutes after the expected time. It is 8.02 p.m. We're going to go ahead and hop right to it after a quick editor's note here, or ex-editor's note, I should say, because Jewels from the Crown is looking for a new managing editor. If you've been on the website the last couple days, you may have seen that there is a link to apply on the website. You may also see it on your favorite job board if you search for King's Jobs. The site is looking for a new editor because I am taking a step back. If you have been around the community, if you're into Kings hockey, if you are a capable writer and you think you have what it takes to run the show, we would love to see your application. In the meantime, Sarah A., whose work you have almost certainly seen on the website, is going to be taking over on an interim basis. She is very capable, and I can't wait to see what she does with the place. And I'll not ask her about it now, but she is joining us for the JewelCast. So, Sarah, how are you?
Yo, pretty good.
Good. It's September 12th. We are less than a month from the start of the season, which means, of course, that everyone is, well, I was going to say everyone's optimistic, but I think everybody is sort of neutral at this point, especially given that we haven't seen most of next year's team actually skate yet. But we have a little bit of news that has come in the past days or weeks or months, and we've gotten to see some of the prospects at work. So we have things to talk about. Sarah, what do you want to start with?
Let's start with the delightful, quote-unquote, performance we saw from our rookies at the Vegas Extravaganza.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it was, we'll get to the point. The Kings did not win any of their three games. They finished last in the tournament. And there are reasons for that. Gabe Vilardi was not present. Cal Peterson was not present. The Kings were not, were actually the only team there without a first-round pick, I believe, skating. So that, I guess, would rule out Rasmus Kupari, too, the 2018 first-rounder. So the Kings were sort of putting their best foot forward without having their best players, and none of the games, I think, were particularly close. Sarah, what were your takeaways? Do you have positives to take away from the tourney, or do you want to start with the negatives?
I mean, I think the positives are that, you know, Jared Anderson-Dolan continues to be a prospect that is getting attention and is looking more and more like we already thought he was a steal for the Kings, but is, you know, was frequently the best player on the ice for the team. And so I think that that's a really great positive. And some of the older players, like the guys who came out of college, like Sheldon Rempel and Mike Essamont, also got, you know, fairly good reviews and were usually some of the stronger players on the ice. So the guys that we expected to really be at that level of like ready to be a difference maker were there. Team cohesion, particularly at these rookie tournaments, was not great. in my past life as a Blackhawks writer, I spent 3 years covering the rookie tournament that they participate in up in Traverse City, Michigan. And if I learned anything from 3 years of driving out there and watching rookies and AHL guys and kids fighting for contracts play hockey, it's that it suddenly looks like no one actually knows how to play on a team. They spend very little time getting to know each other, getting to know their line mates. Coaches mix things up all the time just because the organization wants to see different guys in different situations. A lot of passes don't go to where they're supposed to go because they don't really know where their teammate's going to be. You know, the kids who want contracts doing everything they can do to get noticed, which means a lot of kind of selfish play and not really thinking smart about the game. So I don't know that it's like a the sky is falling and all of our prospects are awful kind of thing because, you know, there were, I think, like at least 2 years in a row, like the Columbus Blue Jackets prospects won the tournament out in Michigan. The Carolina Hurricanes won it a lot. The Blackhawks tournament won the team, or won the tournament last year, and that sure, except for, you know, Alex DeBrincat, like, sure did not translate to anything about the main club. So I don't know that it's much of an indictment on the rookies or the coaching or the systems, but, you know, clear that some of these kids have not quite got their heads back in to actually playing hockey.
Yeah, and I think this is, as you mentioned, the team aspect really kind of goes out the window when you have these guys who haven't played together for the most part. You've got your 18-year-olds coming out of the WHL playing with your 23-year-olds coming out of the NCAAs and everybody in between. And the Ducks were the quote-unquote champions of the rookie tournament, best goal differential, undefeated, so on. And they, I believe, were pretty dominant last year at the sort of the corresponding rookie showcase, and they've got more than one guy who's probably going to make the NHL roster, and your Sam Steele and Troy Terry, guys who, especially in Terry's case, have already kind of produced on a big stage. So you can understand why that kind of team would thrive. And you can't, of course, underestimate the impact of missing your best, your organization's best goalie prospect too. Cal Peterson wasn't there to steal any of these games where the Kings might have been outplayed. Was there, you mentioned Jarrett Anderson Dolan. I think Daniel Brickley also got pretty good reviews from the showcase, and he's probably the one guy that was out there on the ice that has a really good chance at starting the year with the Kings. Any other impressions that you had coming out? Anyone you wanted to maybe see more from, or you're looking forward to how their rookie performance translates to training camp?
I think Mike Essamont is definitely one of those. He did really well, especially playing alongside Jarrett Anderson Dolan. I think he's a little bit of a dark horse to make the team just because there's so many, we already have so many forwards that we don't know where to put. But, you know, is a guy who could definitely step into a big role right away in Ontario probably and put himself in a good position to be called up, you know, in the case of injuries or someone not performing up to par or whatever. So I'm excited to see more from him against higher caliber players. You know, it's one thing to come into a tournament of, you know, kids who are going back to juniors and look really good. And then it's another to start playing these preseason games against, you know, AHL guys and everything, and then suddenly you look out of water. So I'm excited to see more from him. I'm really intrigued by all three of the goalies that we had there. Matt Valalta is going back to juniors to hopefully replicate his ridiculous season with the Greyhounds. And then the other two, Jacob Ingham is the kid going back to Mississauga who had an awful year, and maybe he will have a less awful year. And then the third one was Cole Keller, who's probably headed to Manchester to be, I think, one of the first actual Kings-controlled goalie prospects to be spending time in the EHL or ECHL for quite some time. I think that, you know, all of those guys are quite a long ways away from ever, you know, being really on the Kings' radar, but going to be interesting to see how all three of them develop.
Yeah, and you figure, you know, goalies are voodoo, everybody says, and Peterson is the closest thing to a sure thing that the Kings have had coming up the pipeline in quite some time. I mean, even I think Jonathan Quick, when he was a third rounder coming up through the organization, he was seen as a potential impact guy. But maybe I would say Jonathan Bernier was probably the last sure thing. And Peterson doesn't have the pedigree that Bernier necessarily had, but he's a real, you know, he's got a real shot to earn the backup job in LA probably starting next season. But you figure you have these three kids coming out of juniors. There's a good chance that at least one of them is going to, if not crack the NHL and be a backup to Jonathan Quick, at least sort of solidify the depth. And we've, you know, it's come a long way from past years where the Ontario Reign had to use their goalie coach and his son as a tandem. It's gonna be interesting, and that's kind of the fun part of seeing the training camp roster come out is seeing that there's seven guys there, and all seven of them are potential players that we're going to be seeing in the organization for a while. I think other than that, I don't know. Yeah. And in regards to the rest of the rookie tournament, you know, I don't think we have to talk about it too much more, but I think that it's going to, at least for some of these guys, it hopefully should translate into a pretty good training camp. And you have players like Austin Wagner, who's really known for his speed and not a whole lot else. And you have Sheldon Rempaugh, who's coming. Or have one impact moment in the past that we know about, and we're looking forward to seeing more of them. So with the camp roster out, anything that stuck out to you, anything you're particularly looking forward to with training camp starting in a couple days?
I think it's just going to be interesting to keep an eye on the guys that we know are going to be going pro this year. Like, you know, we all expect Cale Clegg to be starting and spending probably most of the year in Ontario, which will be good for him. But, you know, knowing that this is where he needs to really start making an impact, you know, all the other years of him coming to camp, we knew he was going back to juniors. And so it's like, well, he'll just continue developing on his juniors team. But now, you know, now it's when he has to start learning how to play the game against professionals and not just kids who are going to let him kind of do whatever he wants. So I'm interested to keep an eye on them. There's about like a million defensemen who are going to be in Ontario. So that's going to be an interesting thing to watch to see who makes it, who gets sent to Manchester. There's just the Kings sure love their defense prospects, and they all happen to come of age essentially at the same time. So that's going to be, and the NHL club is going to have the same issue of, you know, multiple guys vying for essentially one or two spots. So I think that's going to be really interesting to keep an eye on. Everyone says this is Paul Ledoux's year to really claim his spot, but if he does, like, if he gets outperformed in camp, like, that's it. Like, I don't think he has a spot left down just because he has to go through waivers. If he comes in and has a bad camp, like, sorry, kid. So I think that's going to be an interesting competition to watch on the blue line. I think that the forward slots are all pretty much set. So it's really down to kind of like the 12th and 13th forward and the 6th and 7th defenseman that we are kind of waiting to see what happens with.
Yeah, kind of a same old story thing there. It seems like every year we're waiting. I think I remember last year was Spantenberg and McDermott that were the 6 and 7 guys coming out of camp, and that obviously didn't last for the entire season, but it's always those last 4 or 5 slots. And in regards to the defensemen, you know that Marcus Phillips and Sean Walker and Matt Roy and
Jacob Muerer and even Clay probably aren't going to come anywhere near cracking the Kings roster, but there's a lot of names on there that we've written about this year and maybe wrote about last year in the top 25 under 25. But some of these guys that, you know, when we back when we were only considering about 32 guys for the top 25 didn't even make it, and now they're finding pivotal slots in Ontario. They're playing every night, whereas some of the more highly touted prospects are still struggling to find a way in. So I think that it's even, you know, after going to camp for a few years now, it's hard to really distinguish guys based on, you know, a 3-on-3 drill or how quickly you can skate around cones with the puck. But it's in a way, I think it's interesting to see what they look like paired up against each other and paired with some of the higher the highly touted guys and the guys who have been in the NHL for a few years. With that said, one of the main question marks coming in is Gabe Vilardi, who as of now is still in recovery, I should say, from back problems that kept him out of rookie camp, that kept him sidelined for a lot of the summer. And this is, you know, a recurring thing for Vilardi. It kept him out of about half of the OHL season last year before he came back and sort of took the OHL by storm. Are you concerned about this, Sarah?
I mean, I'd be lying if I said no. What I have found interesting is that the message that keeps coming out is basically, this is something that can be managed. It's not something that, you know, is going to limit or impact his career, but he has to learn how to manage it correctly. And so the grown-up, the adult part of me is like, well, if you're back, you really only get one of them, so why don't you just do what you're being told? But then the other part of me remembers that this is like a 19-year-old kid who probably does not want to do the like 45 minutes of stretches and whatever else they're telling him to do for his back. Like, try telling a 19-year-old kid anything, yeah, let alone a 19-year-old soon-to-be pro hockey player, anything. It just doesn't happen. So it's concerning to me that it seems like it's kind of on him to manage this and that he's not. But that's also just what his what the press is saying, essentially. So what the actual story is, who knows? But yeah, I mean, it is concerning. Like, I'm glad that they're being cautious with him and not trying to push him, you know, into playing when he physically shouldn't be doing it. But, you know, for someone who was so highly touted, to kind of be in this position now of his career hasn't even started yet and he's already kind of plagued with recurring injuries is a little concerning.
Yeah, and there's the usual, you know, I think Lisa Dillman had an article on The Athletic a couple hours ago about it, and it's, you know, I feel very selfish as a Kings fan wanting to see Vilardi so badly and thinking, well, can't we just see him at camp? It doesn't matter. Like, have him take it easy. Have him, you know, skate out on his knees or something. If he wants to sit on the bench and just shoot pucks and doing that, I'd be very excited to see that. But the quotes are the usual, you know, it's not a specific cause. It's something he has to be careful with. We have to be patient, quotes. And it's hard not to be concerned, I think. And especially since this is sort of a redux of what happened last summer, we were all really excited to see Vilardi out on the Toyota Sports Center ice. And he was there, albeit in October and November, rehabbing while the rest of the team was practicing. So Vilardi is, as we've already said, the main sort of prospect that was expected to really contend for a spot. You maybe don't say lock, but someone who chances were better than not that he was going to make the team out of camp. Do you think, let's just say, Sarah, that he starts skating again in a couple weeks. Do you think that the Kings would be willing to put him in the opening night lineup?
I would like to say no. Like, I'd like to think that maybe they are still cautious and start him on the season on injured reserve instead of pushing him. You know, I think they've said the official diagnosis is week to week. It would be nice if he could get into some preseason games. I think we all, you know, anyone who's seen any clips of him from his days in junior hockey know exactly what we're getting, and it's a very highly skilled player. But it'd be great if we got to see him go up against other people who are maybe a little higher skilled than your average OHL player before we just thrust him into a game situation. So I'd like to see them continue to be cautious with him, but I kind of have the feeling that if much like how Jeff Carter probably came back a little bit too early from his injury, but, you know, could still play. I'm kind of concerned that they might being cautious may end on October 4th or 5th or whatever.
I think it's just hard to imagine the Kings deciding that the NHL is the right place for Vilardi if he doesn't get a full training camp. And that's even a week of training camp, or if he gets into the last three preseason games. The Kings have, I don't think they've really encountered this situation with one of their young players before, where there was somebody who was so impressive despite limited time that they let him in. Anybody who deals with injuries, the Kings have been patient with, which I think is for the best. But it's if he's not out on Friday, I just don't see a way that the Kings decide that starting him on the third line is the right move.
Yeah. And, I mean, it's going to have interesting repercussions for his team in the OHL, too, if they, you know, decide that they don't want him to go pro yet because they want him to, you know, have the bet. They don't want to throw him into being an NHLer before he's physically ready, but he doesn't have the option of going to the AHL yet. The only thing he can do is go back to Kingston, and Kingston is basically just assuming that he's not going to be there. So they would have to find something to do with him, which, you know, is going to create a little bit of chaos for them as well. So I'm sure that they and probably all of the OHL who doesn't want to play against this kid again are probably watching this pretty carefully.
Yeah. I don't know what else he has left to accomplish down there. Maybe score 3 points a game next year. So with the rest of the roster, you mentioned there's probably about 15 to 18 guys that are locks for the open air roster, probably the higher end of that. With the rest of the players coming into camp, there aren't many surprises. The only real name of intrigue that's popped onto the radar is Emerson Edom, which I think is more for name recognition than anything, because he's of course from Long Beach, but also was drafted when the draft was in LA back in 2010. He's been on the Ducks. He was drafted by the Ducks, I believe. And he's been sort of a name that we've seen a couple times a year every year. But he has yet to crack a lineup for the long term. And last year, he spent more time in the AHL, played 16 games in the AHL, scored 4 goals. So there's a question about what he's going to bring to the table. Do you anticipate that this could turn into a Devin Setoguchi-style situation where he cracks the team?
I doubt it. I mean, I would like to think that he, I mean, I don't know anything about him, but I'm sure he's a nice young man. Like, I would like to think that he could maybe recapture some sort of glory, but, you know, looking at his numbers across his career, for a guy who's a first-round pick, just hasn't seemed to be able to catch on. And unlike what I'm reminded of every time I look at Kings draft history, which is Trevor Lewis was a first-round draft pick, but Trevor Lewis, I love him and has managed to find ways to contribute aside from making a huge impact on the score sheet. And I don't know that that's the same case with Emerson here. Would I be opposed to them signing him for league minimum and then stashing him in the AHL for most of the season and then calling him up if they happen to need a warm body who knows what the NHL is like? Sure, that'd be fine. But I don't see him coming in and, you know, making a huge impact. And I feel like, you know, Rob Blake has been fairly quick to pull the trigger on, if you're not scoring, if you're not finding some way to contribute and you're not fitting in, like, you're gone. So I don't really see him giving a guy a contract who, you know, has scrolling down, well, 22 NHL goals over his career, and has not regularly played in the NHL essentially since 2014, and that was like half a season.
Edom told the Coyotes last year, basically, I am done playing in the AHL, and the Coyotes said, okay, great, and they terminated his contract. So there's, you know, I'm sure that Edom sees this as a good opportunity to either recapture his form or at least get time skating against NHL guys. But this could be a Brooks-like kind of thing where he skates a camp and he makes the NHL roster great, and then he doesn't and says, okay, well, that's enough for me, and heads off to Europe. So I agree with you. Even if Gabe Vilardi is injured and Johnny Brodzinski, you know, decides to play with his brother in San Jose, and like even if a bunch of guys leave the team, I don't think that Edom is someone who's going to crack this lineup. So with that being said, there are of course plenty of other intriguing stories at training camp. Ilya Kovalchuk is skating at training camp for the Los Angeles Kings, which is still a little weird to say, but he was out on the ice today holding up a jersey this week. He's actually here. So there's no question about whether he's going to make the team, but what are your early expectations for Kovalchuk?
I mean, I'm excited. I know that a lot of people don't like the signing and don't necessarily like the length of the signing. And like, I get it, you know, he's older. I think that, I was going to say he's older than me, but he isn't. And that's sad.
It's good for the Kings though, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's fine for hockey.
Yeah.
He's older.
Yeah, good.
And I get it. Like I get, you know, not wanting to give a 3-year contract to a guy who's 35, who has not necessarily burned bridges, but, you know, is not always 100% well regarded by some people, especially for the way he left the league and whatever. But he still has it. You know, I don't think that he has forgotten how to play on NHL ice. Like, is he as fast as, like, Connor McDavid? No, but no one is as fast as Connor McDavid. And I think that, you know, will Kopitar be able to repeat what he did last year? You know, maybe, maybe not. But, and, you know, as much as I love Saifalo and his, you know, defensive responsibility and, you know, how well he fit on that line, giving Anze Kopitar a legitimate scoring winger for the first time in ages is a very attractive proposal. And, you know, it's going to bump Iafallo down the lineup, which could mean that maybe if he's playing on the third line with, you know, Adrian Kempe and insert guy over here on the right, maybe he'll provide some depth scoring, which is what the Kings are always tragically short on. So I think it, aside from the, like, will Kovalchuk not score, like, 70 points in the NHL or whatever, I think it has the possibility to shake up the Kings lineup a little bit and, you know, move people around and see what happens.
And I don't, like, there's a wide range of outcomes, I think, for what Kovalchuk does this year, but I don't think it's that wide. Like, I don't think they're, you know, we saw Mike Camilleri come in last year and have one game where he scored 4 points, and I don't even know if he got 4 points in the rest of his game combined. And we've seen players come in. There's someone who I'm blanking on that came in 2 years ago and made the team. We were expecting secondary scoring from him, and he put up a big zero, I think. Maybe he got one assist somewhere. But there, I don't see that as a possible outcome for Kovalchuk, and I'm knocking on wood in the background here. But I think it's he's going to score. It's just a matter of how much and whether he gets to stay with Kopitar. Every guy that we've seen is, oh, this is going to be the year that this guy stays with Kopitar and gives him a consistent winger the entire year. Aside from Dustin Brown last year, we haven't really gotten that recently. And I think Kovalchuk has a better chance than anybody else at it. I'm going to be a little sad to see another number 17 that isn't Wayne Simmonds for the Kings, but I think I'll get used to it. Especially now that Johnny Brodzinski gave it up. Because I had already forgotten that he was wearing 17 until a few seconds ago. Anyone else you're keeping an eye on in camp that you know is going to be on the team this year?
I mean, I feel like the guys we know who are locks, you know, it'll be nice to see Jeff Carter just in general, but also,
sure,
you know, back to form. I know Tyler Toffoli has been skating with him and has already said that, like, he looks ridiculous. So it'll be good to get a full healthy season from him again. And, you know, presuming they put him back with Toffoli and Pearson, like, well, there's your second line of, you know, and there's, like, the lack of worry over what Toffoli and Pearson are going to produce. I think it's going to be a very important year for Johnny Brodzinski, who I think we all believe in and, you know, think pretty highly of, but who just has not managed to catch on for one reason or another with the main team. And I think that this is kind of his make it or break it year. You know, like I said, Rob Blake has been very quick to be like, yeah, no, never mind, you're going to Vancouver now. And I don't want Johnny Brodzinski to be this year's Nick Dowd or Nick Shore just being like, okay, nope, see you later. So I think that he should be coming into this camp very motivated, because even if he's the 13th forward on the team, like, he still will be playing, hopefully. So I'm interested to see what kind of camp he has.
Well, we made it 32 minutes in without bringing up Nick Shore, and I think, honestly, that's longer than I thought we were going to get.
I tried really hard.
You did very well. we'll talk a little bit about Nick Shore at the end of the show, because we're going to have to talk about a couple of other guys who are very specifically not LA Kings. But yeah, with Brodzinski, I'm going to be watching Kempe a lot. I don't think that Adrian Kempe lacks for confidence. I don't think there's any chance of him not making the squad, but he went a lot of games without scoring a goal as the year wound down last year. And I'm interested to see what he learned from that experience, what, you know, where he's going to be skating, what the coaching staff is going to be looking for out of him. And I agree with you. I think that aside from that, you know, and maybe looking at Jeff Carter's return from injury, we know what we're getting from a lot of these guys. And I think I've asked you the same, who are you keeping an eye on question in like four different contexts. So I'm going to try to move on to something that is a little different in structure. So let's talk about just 2018-19 as a whole. The Pacific is still seen as one of the weaker divisions in the NHL. The first spot in the division really is up for grabs, even with Vegas having sort of run the table in every respect last season. A lot of people are expecting them to take a step back. Where do the Kings fall in the pecking order?
They could be literally anywhere. I think that you know, last year we were also kind of perplexed by the team going in, and all of us were cautiously optimistic. This team could be like, they're not going to be dead last, because there's always, I just still don't trust the Coyotes. Like, there's always someone. Mm-hmm. But I think ultimately, are they going to win the division? No. Like, A, that's just not the Kings in general. I think they're probably more of a wild card spot again, which is fine. This team could do literally anything, and I would be like, oh yeah, that makes sense. Anything could happen at this point. I'm excited. I think I'm probably a little more optimistic than some other people I've seen around Kings fandom, but I think that I think Kovalchuk's a good addition. I think that if we can get any scoring wrung out of our bottom six, that would be an even bigger help. We're going to have a full year of Jeff Carter, hopefully a full year of Jonathan Quick, hopefully.
Please.
A full year of as long as no one like implodes the first week of the season again. What this team can do with a fully healthy squad the whole year, I think could be really fun to watch.
Yeah, and Carlos wrote a nice piece a few weeks back about the bottom six players, specifically Kyle Clifford and Nate Thompson, but about how that role has sort of shifted for the league as a whole, but maybe a couple years behind the rest of the league for the Kings too. Andy Andreoff is not walking through that door. They don't have anybody really coming through the system that sort of mirrors that the type of style that maybe Kyle Clifford brings to the table. They drafted a 5'7" player over the summer and drafted him fairly highly too. This wasn't a Justin Azevedo or a Brandon Cozen that they picked in the sixth round and figured, okay, let's watch them chip in the AHL. So it's I'm optimistic about the bottom six scoring improving. I think that it's been a slow, almost unnoticeable shift in a lot of ways, but I think they're set up to contribute better. I want to see if John Stevens goes back to the Kempe, Lewis, Iafallo third line that everybody was drooling over last year that actually didn't play very well together. And I'm hoping that Vilardi is ready for the season, but if not, I think if anything, that might be more opportunity for Brodzinski. And he's built some off ice chemistry with Kempe and some of the other young players on the Kings. But we just got to hope that he finds a way to fit in on the ice too. On defense, Brickley is in the picture for the sixth spot. Ledoux is in the picture. You've still got Oscar Fantenberg. You've still got Curtis McDermott. Other players contending. Who are you expecting to sort of win the regular spot next to Doughty and Muzzin and Martinez and Phaneuf and whoever the fifth defenseman is that I'm forgetting?
I mean, who's that other guy? I think it's Ledoux, and I think that it's going to be a decision made largely on the fact that if they try to put him through waivers, they'll probably lose him. So I think that this is his chance to make it, unless he would have to have a disastrous camp, I think, for them to send him back down. But I think everyone in the organization probably remembers that Oscar Fantenberg conducted himself very well during the playoffs. Some of that was the effect of, I believe he played alongside Drew Doughty sometimes, and I think that the really long game he played with Alec Martinez. So, he was sheltered a little bit in that he had someone more experienced alongside him. But I don't think anyone's forgotten, how good he looked in the playoffs. And so I think uh-huh. that he could have a leg up just because of people remembering that.
My apologies to Derek Forbert, who I legitimately blanked on just now.
Oh, that guy.
Yeah, I've been forgetting about him for years, and he keeps proving me wrong. So you'll have to pry that that next to Doughty spot out of his cold, dead hands. I don't know if Vandenberg claims a spot, but I feel like he does. That's the slightly off the board pick here, because you don't play 40 minutes in a playoff game and then just leave. I don't know. Maybe he's a good trade chip, but that I don't know if that time has passed or not. But I still remember how good he looked in some of those early games last year and how much of a believer I was in him, and I don't want to give up on that possibility. Again, I've found myself being very selfish a lot this summer as a Kings fan. But it's going to be, well, we'll just have to see how it unfolds at training camp. And with Cale Clegg coming up and some other solid prospects there too, it's like we saw last year, Vandenberg and McDermott won the spots out of camp, and now we don't know if we're going to see either of them in the NHL this year. It's a constantly shifting. any players that you're expecting to have really, if not a breakout performance, to really exceed expectations, like maybe Kopitar and Brown did last year?
The first name that came to me was just Adrian Kempe. I would love to see him have a ridiculous year and really lock down, you know. Do I think that he's a bottom, you know, a third line center? No, I think he definitely probably should be playing more top line minutes. But, you know, if he continues to develop the way that he should be, he would be like an amazing legitimate threat on that third line. I also hope that maybe over the summer he learned how to take a face off. But I hope that this is a big year for him, because I think that even though he's been one of our favorite prospects for basically as long as he's been in the system, that he still has a lot of doubters, and that long stretch where he didn't score any goals or anything, you know, I think that only gave fuel to the people who are like, yeah, trade him for, you know, a bag of pucks and maybe, you know, whatever. I really want to see him have a big year, and I think that having good line mates alongside him will definitely help with that.
Yeah, and I think that there's, you know, every young player, I think, before Kempe that came up, at least within the last 3 to 5 years, none of them really got the sort of opportunities that Kempe did in his first year. And I don't think Kempe necessarily was disappointing last season. I just think that there was, you know, we had built up some expectations, and with him getting as much time as he did and getting to play with guys who had been there for a few years and not just, you know, your fourth line winger of the year, that there was more to expect from there. So hopefully you're right. I'm looking at Tanner Pearson just because I feel like he's still capable of the kind of season that we haven't gotten from him yet. And hopefully it's not a running joke again where I, on the podcast, where I talk about how Pearson's been disappointing and someone points out to me that he had more assists than he ever did before. I want to see him sort of put it all together. And I think there was a lot to build on from last year with finding a net front presence and maybe putting together some better team play and getting another full, healthy season in the books. I think he actually did play 82 games, if I'm not mistaken. So I think there's an opportunity there for him too. And otherwise I'm just, from the back line, I'm just hoping that Jake Muzzin does his Jake Muzzin stuff again.
Definitely.
What else you got, Sarah? Any other players, that you wanted to discuss before we got to the rest of the league, or any other questions that you have on your mind, with this last month of the offseason?
Do we have to, like, say a quick, you know, prayer or what have you for the continued health of Jonathan Quick's groin and or other associated muscles, that he just stays in one piece again. Like, that's, you know, it's very nice to for once feel like we have consistency in goal and that we have a pipeline of people behind him that, if he goes down, I think that, you know, the team has a reasonable amount of faith in Jack Campbell. We also have Peter Budaj now hanging out in Ontario, and, you know, Cal Peterson's probably not quite ready for the NHL yet, but could probably hold his own for a game or two. But just every time I watch him, he gives me anxiety, and I just have to continue hoping that he is going to just always be Jonathan Quick.
And I think we're past the days where we can get half a season of Ben Scrivens and never played an NHL game before Martin Jones and still comfortably make the playoffs. Are you worried about, like, is Jack Campbell, has he done enough to be the Kings backup all season for you?
I guess. I mean, he was fine in the times we've seen him in the NHL. He certainly deserves the chance. I think he's proved everything
he
can prove at the AHL level. I'm glad that they didn't go out and spend a bunch of money on a, like, insert semi not great backup goalie here. I think Campbell makes more sense organizationally, but I do feel like as soon as he hits a stretch of bad games, because we all know that there will be some amount of games he has to play because Jonathan Quick tweaks something or whatever, I feel like the first bad game he plays, people will be very displeased. But I think it's the right choice because the goalie market was not great this year for backups that, you know, were cost effective. And I mean, look what the Blackhawks gave to Cam Ward, who is not good. There were a lot of goalies hitting the market who got a lot of money and a lot of term that I don't think the Kings were going to be interested in committing to. So I think that Campbell was the choice, both because he has kind of earned it and because the other options were just not particularly appealing.
Yeah, my early season sort of outlook is I think there's a really good chance that the Kings do sort of the reverse of what they did with Darcy Kuemper, where if they are in the mix and they have had any issues with Campbell, that they may go out and rent a backup, so to speak. But I think it's less risky to try Campbell at the beginning of the season than it was last year to trust him in four games against tough competition in the middle of a playoff race, which, again, he did acquit himself really well in. And it's a little strange that with the Kings' pipeline at goaltender being as good as it's ever been, this might be more of a question mark in terms of backup compared to past seasons where they've decided to pick up a veteran who you knew, even if he wasn't outstanding, would at least be competent. And Campbell has done enough to show that he will probably be competent, but it's less of a sure thing. But I don't think this is a playoff team without Jonathan Quick either way. So what are we even talking about here?
Exactly.
So we've got, I guess we've got as much time as we need, but with about 10 minutes expected, the sort of big news from the recent week around the NHL was the Max Pacioretty trade. Pacioretty, of course, was heavily rumored to be going to the LA Kings around the NHL draft, and at the very least, the Kings were considered a major contender for his services. Somewhat predictably, he ended up going to the Vegas Golden Knights, a team that both we didn't want him to go to, but also was probably one of the likeliest options given the amount of cap space they have and the amount of assets they were able to give up. First question, if you're the Kings, and I think people were talking about this almost exact scenario on Twitter. But the comparable package to give up would have been either Jared Anderson Dolan or Rasmus Kupari, a really good young center prospect, as well as a productive scoring winger, like maybe Tanner Pearson, plus a second round pick. Is that too rich for your blood?
Yes. Absolutely. Yes. I would, yeah. And anyone who's ever read me talking about trade stuff is, I'm probably much more conservative, which is why I'm not an NHL GM among several reasons why I'm not. Especially with the money that he ended up getting, and the I think it was like, what, a 4-year contract, 4 years plus the 1 year he still has under contract. I wouldn't have done it. I don't think that, giving up a, 24, 25 year old player in, Tanner Pearson or Tyler Toffoli, whichever one they wanted, would have been worth it. But everyone else seems to be, not everyone, but a large number of people seem to be annoyed that the Kings did not make this happen. But it seems like they tried their hardest and that it was just vetoed by Pacioretty's camp. So.
Yeah, which probably Rob Blake is at least maybe upset about, but also thinks, they can't blame me for not getting this one done because Pacioretty said no. I'm taking the coward's way out and saying that I hadn't actually devised my own opinion on that. But I'm not as strongly against the idea of giving that kind of package up as you are, especially with Kopitar around for a long time and Velarde probably coming up through the pipeline and Carter around for a couple of years. I might have been willing to do it for someone with Pacioretty's pedigree. Having said that, I'm also taking the less popular opinion that getting Kovalchuk for nothing was better than getting Pacioretty for something, at least for the immediate future. So I'm very wishy-washy, which maybe shouldn't be too surprising. Do you think that this makes Vegas the favorite to win the Pacific again this year?
Probably. I mean, also, like, Ottawa still has
the pain in that sentence.
And, like, Ottawa still has to figure out what they're doing with Erik Karlsson, and, like, knowing Vegas, he's going to end up there for, like, eternity, and we're going to have to put up with them more. I wish that I weren't so annoyed by the Vegas Golden Knights that I am. I think that, realistically, they got a ridiculous year from Marc-Andre Fleury. They somehow played like 14 different goalies, and all of them turned into like the reincarnation of Patrick Waugh plus, Carey Price today, like in that good season. Like, they just all were real good. And is that something that's repeatable? If their defense struggles, or if, they can't replace, they just got Max Pacioretty to replace the goals. But if for some reason the team doesn't work out as well, is the goaltending going to be as magical as it was last year? And I think that that's going to be a lot of what tells the story of Vegas this year, is that they had this ridiculous run last year that was just sparked by who knows what. And a lot of it are things that may not actually be sustainable, but because the universe like is the way it is, they probably will win the division again.
I absolutely refuse to turn around and say that Marc-Andre Fleury is going to have an off year after watching what he did against the Kings in the playoffs, because it feels like tempting said universe. even with that, I mean, it's hard to imagine them coming down to earth so violently that they like aren't fighting for the top spot in the division. But crazier things have happened. Teams have made the Stanley Cup Finals and missed the playoffs next season, as we all know reasonably well. I'm glad we're recording this before Erik Karlsson gets traded, because if it had just happened, then we'd be probably incoherent for most of this. There are various rumors flying around, some of which are from sources that are less reputable. There was a guy from the Vegas Review Journal saying that the Golden Knights ramped up their efforts to acquire Karlsson, and another guy from Fox in Vegas that said that the Pacioretty trade takes them out of the Karlsson sweepstakes. So I'm just going to go ahead and wait for something to happen before I. I've already waited.
I was just reminded by a tweet that I saw about Nate Schmidt is going to be out for the first 20 games because of all of that nonsense, which is going to affect them negatively. Shea Theodore still doesn't have a contract, and he is a very good up-and-coming young defenseman. Why he's a holdout, who knows? Vegas has more cap space than they know what to do with, so it's not an issue of being able to fit him under a cap. So they could have some weird defense wiggliness of Theodore might be a last minute signing and may not get a full training camp in, who knows? So there could be some things happening on their defense that could have an impact on their season, especially at the beginning as well.
Yeah. And with, the depth they had last year, they were able to really resist most of their injury troubles, even somehow at the goalie position. And I wonder if a year going by and the depth thinning out a little bit, whether that's going to be an issue. But their rookies certainly look good. And they have Cody Glass, who's kind of their version of Gabe Vilardi. Aside from the Golden Knights, do you think any of the teams that were in the playoffs last season fade out? Do you think the Sharks and the Ducks are going to stay pretty consistent?
Yeah, I mean, the Ducks will have the issue of, I think, Ryan Kesler is going to be out for quite some time, I think, with an injury. But other than that, they're still bringing back basically the same thing. The same team. I don't recall them doing anything too wild. Same with San Jose. I think that they'll both be about the same teams that they were before. Who knows with Calgary what they're going to be. Same thing for Edmonton. They could be good. They could be awful again. Vancouver's going to be bad. there's no way around that. Who's the other Pacific team? Who did I forget? Oh, Arizona.
Arizona?
Who knows what Arizona could be. If Arizona played very well at the end of the year, scary good. But it just seems like it always takes them, for one reason or another, it takes them a little too long to get started. If they can put all of the pieces together at the beginning of the year and they get the good goaltending from Antti Raanta and Darcy Kuemper, they could be a sneaky choice to climb up the ranks and possibly be a team the Kings are really going to have to compete with for the wild card slot that I'm just going to go ahead and put them into now. But at least we probably won't have to worry about Vancouver. I'm pretty confident on that prediction, at least.
Yeah, probably. Fingers crossed there. With that being said, the Kings training camp does start in 2 days on Friday morning. The rosters are posted online in various places. The Kings are at relatively good health heading into the season. Vilardi, of course, is recovering from his back injury, but most of the other guys who were either hurt at the end of last season or struggled with injuries during the playoffs, which, as you know, from any NHL playoff report is 10 people probably. But most of them are in shape and ready to go. The one guy who we are not expecting to see on the ice at Toyota Sports Center is Nick Shore. And I promise we'd talk about him. So let's do it. He still doesn't have an NHL contract. He apparently has drawn interest from, and I quote, several teams. So he's going to probably end up somewhere. Sarah, are you – well, I know you're upset about this, so go ahead and and tell me why Nick Shore isn't signed yet and why you disagree.
He's not signed yet because teams are dumb. Okay. I don't know why he's not. I don't know why he's not signed yet. Who knows? I think that a lot of teams are kind of waiting to see how their training camps shake out and if anyone rises to the occasion to claim a spot. And if not, you know, I think that as training camps go on, we'll probably see him pop up somewhere. I will admit that my nightmare is that, like, he signs with the Ducks or something. Because my potentially misguided affection for Nick Shore as a hockey player, I don't know if that can transcend my feelings about the Ducks. And if he were to go to Vegas, like, he might be dead to me. I don't know. But it is a little bizarre. He's never going to score you a million goals, but he is a good fourth line player who can play up if he's needed to. And someone please sign my boy. I'm sad.
I'm already worried enough about Tobias Reeder scoring 7 goals in 4 games against the Kings this season. I don't need to worry about what Nick Shore does too.
No, that's also sad.
I mean, at least in Reeder's case, he didn't really earn his way back, unfortunately. At least he didn't score. Not to say that Nick Shore did score. But I'm glad that if you're still listening, I'm glad you decided to stick it out for our Nick Shore appreciation minute. And don't worry, if he signs somewhere, we'll be the first to complain about it on Twitter.
I guarantee.
With that, I think we've gone for about an hour or so. Go ahead and call it here. We still have more work to do with our off-season posts. We have gotten through the first, 17 entries on our top 25 under 25. If you want to read about recently written about players like Matt Vallotta, Mikey Anderson, Akil Thomas, and somehow we didn't mention in the entire podcast, Mike Amadio, who is our number 9 player. If you want to read more about them, we've written about a ton of those guys. And you know you'll be seeing articles about players like Velarde and Kempe and whoever else cracked our top 8 coming up too. We'll also make sure that we have some stuff for you relating to training camp. We'll tell you about what Ilya Kovalchuk is doing now that he's finally not a dream, real life in Los Angeles. The preseason is starting, I think, on Tuesday night at Staples. So lots to talk about. On that note, though, we'll go ahead and stop talking for now. So, Sarah, thanks again for coming on. Anything else you want to plug or discuss before we jump off here?
There's some kind of Kings versus Kings scrimmage coming up in Ontario, I think over the weekend. I think Sunday or Tuesday or it's coming up very soon. So it will be kind of the first chance of seeing a lot of players in action, and I believe I've seen a couple reports that have said that there's actually going to be more of the actual locks for team guys making an appearance this year than usual when they've done this. If you're in the Ontario area, go check it out. I think there's still tickets, and you might be able to see someone whose name you have actually heard of before.
Yeah, and I think that is actually confirmed. That is Sunday afternoon at 3 p.m. So that will be smack in the middle of training camp. How fun. And after that, the Kings play Arizona on Tuesday. That's actually a split squad. Further games coming through the rest of September, including the preseason finale at Staples against the Ducks. And hopefully by then we'll have some idea of whether Gabe Velarde is okay and whether Johnny Brodzinski is going to make the team and how Daniel Brickley is doing and all that. So thanks again, Sarah, for joining. Thanks to whoever's listening there. I think we'll be back for one more podcast before the season starts because we have to do our overly optimistic predictions for how the Kings are going to do. So thanks again, everybody, and we'll be back soon.